So if I'm trying to think of getting a bunch of engineers, my inclination is going to be like, get a bunch of kind of middle-aged white guys. Like, that's kind of the archetype of the engineer. And if I get like a Sudanese Muslim woman coming into my office, I'm going to have to do a little bit more cognitive work to see her in that engineering role. And most people don't do that cognitive work.
I'm your host, Michelle King, and you are listening to The Fix, a podcast that shares the stories of women and men who are innovating and taking action to advance equality in the workplace and beyond. On today's episode, we'll be hearing from social advocate, engineer, and author Yasmin Abdul-Majeed. Yasmin is a Sudanese-Australian author, engineer, and social justice advocate. Throughout her life, she's had to overcome stereotypes. As a young, black, visibly Muslim woman, Yasmin says that she's always felt as though people saw her as the other. I hope Yasmin's story not only inspires you to break glass ceilings in your career, but also encourages you to speak out against unconscious biases at work. Born in Sudan, Yasmin arrived in Australia before she was 2 years old. She was the first headscarf-wearing student in her Christian high school's history. Yasmin graduated with a first-class honours degree in engineering and started working on oil rigs, often as the only woman and Muslim. Yasmin is passionate about women and minority empowerment and also works as an activist and public speaker on these issues. Her 2014 TED Talk received over 2 million views, and it really challenges us to think differently about some of the beliefs that we hold. On this episode, Yasmin shares her story and experience with overcoming prejudice and how businesses need to get comfortable with confronting these issues at work.
When I was hired by one of the oil companies that I worked for, I was essentially given less pay than someone who had less experience than me starting out at the same time. And when I queried that, their response was to say, well, you know, it's inappropriate for you to be discussing pay with your colleagues, right? And I had actually asked to negotiate my pay when I started because I'd come in with experience. And so, you know, in that moment, you're like, oh, well, maybe this is just a situation. But then you look at that as part of a trend and you're like, oh, wow, I thought that I was escaping my gender or my race or my physicality, but actually I was not. It's always a challenge with this sort of stuff to be able to say this was concretely because of X or Y or Z, particularly as like a Muslim black woman, right? Like, can I say that happened because I'm a woman or because of my race, because of my religion? Like, the intersection plays out in lots of different ways. But there's some really interesting research that looks about how women in particular are marginalized in the engineering space. And one of those things is that women are tuned out, right? Which means that essentially when a woman's idea is voiced, it's not really listened to. It's not seen with the same credibility as a male colleague's. And it tends to be repeated. And when it's repeated by a male colleague, then it's seen as true. So when you have a lifetime or entire career of people not believing what you're saying or not assuming that you know what you're doing because of your gender or race or whatever, it makes it very difficult to build credibility. Like, the number of times that I went onto a rig and the first thing people asked me was, are you married, instead of what is your experience or do you know what you're doing or like, this is the situation on the rig at the moment, jump in. People are more interested in my marital status. Like, that is also a reflection of the bias that women have to face, particularly female engineers face, in that like, there's a gendered stereotype of what your primary role in the world is. I think the first thing to really make clear is that cognitive bias is something that we all have as human beings, right? And it's a result of the fact that our brains get a lot of information at any given point, about 11 million pieces of information at any given point, but we can only process about 40.
Yasmin says that our brains are hardwired to take shortcuts and process information unconsciously. Because of this, we tend to make decisions based on information that we don't necessarily believe to be true. According to Yasmin, this cognitive bias shows up everywhere, particularly when it comes to hiring decisions.
You could show someone this exact same resume with a male name and a female name, and the female name will be deemed less competent, be offered the job fewer times, and be offered a lower salary if they are offered a salary. And because those norms and those stereotypes and those expectations are so strong, we actually have to do cognitive work in order to think of ideals that are not that, or think of examples that are not that. So if I'm trying to think of getting a bunch of engineers, my inclination is going to be like get a bunch of kind of middle-aged white guys. Like that's kind of the archetype of the engineer. And if I get like a Sudanese Muslim woman coming into my office, I'm going to have to do a little bit more cognitive work to see her in that engineering role. And most people don't do that cognitive work. But the first step in challenging all of this and thinking, okay, how do we build a more inclusive society? And how do we build more inclusive workplaces? Is to say, hey, all of us have biases, and it's about recognizing them, acknowledging they exist, and then starting to do that cognitive work to mitigate against it.
As Yasmin's career progressed, she learned that there were inequalities she couldn't necessarily outperform. But there are a few things that we can do to navigate inequality at work, and here Yasmin shares a few of them.
You can find a sponsor in a company who will vouch for you and who will lend their credibility and their authority to you. So like, say, for example, if I was in the situation where nobody was listening to my ideas, if I had a senior person on that rig be like, actually, I'm backing Yasmin here, then all of a sudden he's lent me his credibility. He's imparted some of his privilege to me, and like my standing improves because of that. But I often say to those with more, you know, structural privilege, like recognize the fact that you have a gift that you can actually help other people out in ways that are not going to damage you, but are actually going to be really beneficial for the person that you're trying to help out. I've got a group of, you know, women of color, entrepreneurial friends and writers that I can be like, oh my God, this thing happened. And they're there not to say, are you sure? Are you maybe just imagining it? And they're just like, girl, we got you. Like, it's so awful. And having that support network to just like take a little bit of that burden is really, really, really helpful.
According to Yasmin, one of the things that all of us can do is actively engage in conversations with our colleagues about inequalities and biases that we experience at work.
And being like, hey, I don't know if you know, but these things are happening within the organization. These are the challenges that people are facing. And it would be great to tackle some of them with you. Like, what does that look like? Is it possible to do that? And kind of calling people in so that it's not like an us versus them situation. It's a how do we make this environment the best for us all? I think there's a lot of opportunity in that.
Yasmin wants business leaders to take the problem of inclusion and diversity seriously. She says that leaders need to work just as hard in solving this problem as they do generating profits for their companies. And when it comes to addressing inequality, Yasmin says we cannot afford to take a one-size-fits-all approach.
Like, a white man who is gay has a different experience to a black woman, has a different experience to a person with a disability, and not to assume that all of those things are the same. Yes, some of those marginalizations may appear in the same way or may manifest in the same way, but the challenges behind them and the power structures, this is really important, the power structures behind those differences are not the same. And so it is a lot of work to be aware of all of these challenges, but you don't also have to do all the work yourself. You can find people who have done this work, and then you can listen to them and trust them.
When it comes to uncomfortable conversations on this topic, she advises each of us to be more generous and open-minded.
Often when people are telling you why they are made uncomfortable in a particular space for whatever reason, it's actually not about you. So don't turn it around and be like, well, I've actually done X, Y, Z to make this. No, that's actually not what the person wants to hear. What they want to hear is, oh my God, that's really hard for you. I'm sorry that it's that way. How can I fix it? How can we make this better? Maybe, like, again, it's the hardest work you'll ever have to do, I think, is looking at ourselves and asking, am I genuinely as generous and accepting and unbiased as I like to think I am? Because we're almost always not. But once you acknowledge, okay, maybe I do have a lot of biases, maybe there is a lot that I can do to improve.
Finally, Yasmin says that one of the most important things we can do is not to internalize every single challenge we're facing.
I mean, having the knowledge that it's not you and that you're part and a reflection of a structural inequality is really empowering. I have found it really empowering to be like, oh, this is not just about me. Like, it's not that they don't like me. It's that this is the way the world is. Like, learning about these statistics, understanding it, but then not seeing it as like a death sentence, not seeing it as like something that will resign you forever to a particular situation. So now when I go into a situation, I will call out and name these particular biases. I'll be like, hey, look, I know that I don't look like the person for this job. I know that you've got these biases in your mind, but I know that they're there. Having that information is really useful because you can kind of name what's happening to you and not feel like it's a personal affront.
I really hope you all enjoyed my conversation with Yasmin. This week's fix is to really challenge yourself to look at some of the biases that you hold. This is not always an easy thing to do because most people think that they're unbiased, but creating a more equal workplace really starts with you. And there are a ton of resources out there to help you tackle this, one of which is the Harvard University Implicit Bias Test, which all of you can take to see what biases you might need to work on. We've included a link to this in our show notes and on our site, michellepking.com/thefix. We've also got a copy of it in our weekly newsletter. When it comes to gender inequality at work, one of the core biases that people hold is that women are somehow not as competent, capable, or intelligent as men. On today's Fairy Godboss Insights, we want to tackle the biases about gender stereotypes related to high levels of intellectual ability head on. In one of three experiments, researchers taught 192 children aged 5 to 7 years how to play team games. When children were told that intelligence was a factor to play the game well, girls were only selected as teammates 38% of the time, compared to 53% of the time when children were not told this. The study suggests that by the age of 6, girls begin to avoid activities that are seen as something that the smart kids engage in. In another experiment, over 1,000 adults were asked to refer individuals for a job opening. Half of the participants were told that the job required high IQ. Only 44% of the group that was given this information referred a woman for the job. When the job did not mention intellectual ability, 51% of referrals were for women candidates. This research suggests that despite the fact that women are graduating at a higher rate than men, women are still likely to encounter bias in situations where intellectual ability is viewed as the key to success. Thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. If you haven't already, please subscribe to my newsletter, The Fix, at michellepking.com/thefix. Each week, you'll be able to read about other inspiring individuals and organizations that are working to advance equality. Plus, you'll receive exclusive insights from our podcast episodes. Thank you all so much for tuning in, and I'll catch you guys again next week.